This is the Living Clean Podcast. This podcast is not meant to replace meetings, sponsorship, step work, or service. This podcast is meant to be another tool in your recovery toolbox. Our guests are here to share their experience, strength, and hope with recovery through Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for joining us. Welcome back to the Living Clean Podcast. This is Mason S. I'm an addict. We are back for another episode. This week we're featuring another story in the back of the book, Atheist Recover 2. We're fixing to have my man Sean. He's going to narrate the story. Takes about 7 minutes or so. And then we're going to do an interview with not only the author of the story, but a couple of members who were greatly impacted by this story and really got a big hope shot from this story. So stay tuned. Hope you enjoy.
My name is Sean, and I'm an addict. The process of recovery and the spiritual principles of NA are a power greater than himself for this atheist addict. Atheist Recover 2, Basic Text, 6th Edition. I grew up without a teaching of God. My father, though raised in a very devout family, renounced all faith in the religion he had been taught. I, too, couldn't believe that there was something out there that had some magical power to do the impossible, to defy the laws of physics. There were many things beyond my understanding, but to attribute them to a deity was, in my mind, just another way of avoiding the fear of the unknown. Too many people used God, or the devil as it were, to deflect credit due or to avoid taking responsibility for their mistakes. I viewed the institution of religion as a means of controlling the masses, and I didn't want to be controlled. I made it my mission to refute this God in which other people believed and put their faith, but they resisted. In fact, in spite of all my efforts, I convinced not one person that they were wrong and that I was right. I just isolated myself all the more. So when I got clean, I was apprehensive, to say the least. However, I was ready for a new way of life, so I just focused on today, and just for today, I was on step one. And there was no God in step one. I got a sponsor who taught me about showing up and being dependable. He taught me about how to be available and not to be judgmental. He shared his experience and allowed me mine. The foundation of my recovery was laid in our relationship. I wanted what he had and was beginning to get it. We moved on to step two, and it was time to cross the God bridge. I went on a quest to find a power greater than myself. I stepped out of my comfort zone and sought out people of both conventional and unconventional religious faiths. I opened my mind to what worked for others. I questioned, I listened, and I practiced. My search brought me to a number of different spiritual and religious groups, but I didn't find my place among any of them. What I was looking for was something quantifiable, something tangible to put on display. See this? This is what I believe. This is the God of my understanding. Maybe if I could find that God, recovery would be easier, but that's not what I found. With no breakthroughs, feeling lost and dejected, I decided to approach step two another way. Perhaps the steps, the fellowship, service, and my sponsor would be enough to help me find recovery without a God. Steps 3, 7, and 11 pose the greatest challenge because of their references to God and prayer. Steps 2 and 6 required some creative thinking as well. In practicing the second step, NA and the group became a power greater than me. By participating and being of service, I was able to put the needs of the group and the suffering addict before my wants. My self-centeredness began to ease, and a restoration to sanity began to take place. I was right where I was supposed to be. I could see that my struggles weren't in vain, even when times were hard. I was experiencing life and growing as a result. In the third step, I began turning my will and my life over to the process of recovery and to the spiritual principles that could be found in the steps. I was told to be honest about my belief, even if it was devoid of a God. Otherwise, the remaining steps would be of no value. I started to have faith in what recovery could offer me. With the strength and courage I found, I continued with the rest of the steps. In step 6, my defects of character were in the forefront of my mind. As I became more aware of their effects on my life, I tried to control my defects by suppressing them. The result was that they seemed to become worse, causing more harm both to those close to me and to myself. I reached the place where I was entirely ready to rid of my defects, and I moved on to step 7. Believing that humility was an important aspect of the seventh step, I went to others for their experience. By earnestly seeking the experience of others, including those with whom I had little in common, I was performing acts of humility. I endeavored to live life by spiritual principles in order to relieve my shortcomings. Instead of merely trying to be rid of my shortcomings, I sought to replace them with something positive. Step 11 was a bit of a conundrum. I'm an atheist who believes in the power of prayer, I became known for saying. The statement, meant to shock people, became a conviction. Prayer wasn't getting on my knees and petitioning a deity. Rather, it was how I lived. As a prayer, all my decisions became important and relevant, regardless of how insignificant they might seem on the surface. I saw meditation as a tool or exercise to help expand my awareness. It helped to put me in the moment and to maintain my presence of mind throughout the day. The result was a spiritual awakening, a realization that I could stay clean, work the steps, be an upstanding member of Narcotics Anonymous, have a life worth living, and carry a message of recovery. All this was possible without a God. My initial fear of not being able to stay clean because I could not come to believe in a God had passed. I now had proof that it was possible, and the proof was in how I lived. I sponsored many people, some who struggle with believing in God and others who have a firm religious faith. Those who struggle find that they are not alone and are accepted as they are. Those with strong faith find that they too can share openly with me and their beliefs are welcomed and accepted. Either way, my sponsees and I have the opportunity to grow together. I trust that what they come to believe has the power to help them, and they have the same trust in what I have come to believe. Sometimes we disagree on the particulars, but the particulars aren't what keep us clean. What keeps us clean is the choice that each of us makes not to pick up and to live this way of life to the best of our ability. This is a spiritual program, not a religious one. I try different approaches to working the steps. I still read and try to expand my knowledge on spiritual topics, and I constantly review my experience and contemplate its meaning in my life. This isn't to say that I don't question what I believe from time to time or that I don't struggle, because I do. Life isn't always easy. Sometimes I feel alone during hard times. Believing in a God is alluring because I know others find comfort there, but I do not. Today, I do have a spiritual solution, however. The steps provide me with a framework for applying spiritual principles. Service acts as a conduit to relieve my self-centered thinking. The fellowship reminds me that I'm not alone, and my sponsor is a guide through the process. I continue to be a seeker. Anyone with a desire to stay clean can stay clean.
Okay, thank you so much, Sean. All right, well, let's get right into it. We're going to start with some introductions, starting with my man, Francis.
My name is Francis. I'm an addict, and my clean date is December 22nd, 1992. My home group is You Are the Book, book study. It meets at 6:30 a.m. in Chico, California on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's a great day to be clean.
Yes, it is. Welcome, Francis. All right, next let's go with Jeremy.
Well, my name's Jeremy. I'm an addict. My clean date is August 24th, 1989. And my home group is the Wii version. We meet on Tuesday night at 7 p.m. in Asheville, North Carolina.
Awesome. Welcome, Jeremy. Wade.
Hi, my name's Wade. I'm an addict. Been clean since 6-8-2010, June 8th, 2010. And my home group is Making a Healthy U-Turn, also known as MAHU.
Welcome back, Wade. It's good to see you again. And then last but certainly not least, Brady.
Good evening. Brady, I'm an addict. Clean date, 2-9-23. So coming up on 2 years. Home group is Tupelo Group. Narcotics Anonymous, we meet Saturday through Thursday from 6 to 7.
Welcome, Brady. First time on the show. Glad to have you. I always forget this, and Francis calls me out. My clean date's 1-21-18. Home group is Dark Side of the Moon group here in Hohenwald, Tennessee. So we're all introduced, And I think now I'm going to kick it over to Francis, and we're going to start this show. Go ahead, Francis.
Well, I'm really excited about this episode. We have Jeremy here and Wade. Wade had done some work with me during the pandemic in the Paradise Strong book study meeting, where we had some of the authors come in. And so, this is such an important story in relationship to Narcotics Anonymous. And there's a lot of people that struggle with the God thing when they get clean. And I'm certainly one of them. And my sponsor pointed me to the story Up From Down Under when I got clean. I got clean on the fifth edition basic text. And that was the atheist story back then. And now we have Atheist Recovered too. And so I'm just excited about it. And we have Brady and Wade with us, who are both familiar with the story. And so rather than you telling us your story, this is more of like an interview. Like we're deviating from the Paradise Strong book study format into just talking to you about your story and how that came about. And I guess I could start with that. One of the things that I really enjoyed about the story where you were talking about your life being a prayer, or the actions of living by spiritual principles were kind of like how you were praying, rather than praying to a deity, you were making your life a prayer. Can you elaborate on that at all?
Yeah, sure. It's funny to look back at what I wrote back then in terms of that particular part, because I have sometimes I struggle with the word prayer itself, because it means different things to different people. And kind of the way that I was thinking of it at the time is often very different than the way people think of the word prayer. So my awareness at the time was that, and today, is that my choices and my actions have an impact both in my life and in the lives of others and in the world at large. And it's important for me to be, or to take responsibility for the choices that I make, and that they have meaning, oftentimes greater meaning than I think they do in the immediate. So if I can keep that in my awareness, I make better choices. My actions are better actions. I cause less harm. I create less wreckage. So yeah, that's kind of how I think of that piece, that idea of living my life as if it itself is a prayer. That was my conception at the time. Yeah. Mm.
So I was wondering if Wade would like to jump in any time here. If you guys want to share, please raise your hands. If you have a question. Okay, there we go.
I do. Yeah, I think it was you that you speaking of the prayer. The mere act of walking to a meeting is a prayer. I think I got that from you. And that really helped me tons, because I was tired of changing the language of NA, switching out the word God for this, or, and I just felt like I shouldn't have to do that, and I'm so used to fighting for my space in life, in the world, mm-hmm. being also a LGBT community member. And so I just wanted to thank you for that little insight, because it just kind of made me softer when it came to my approach with, just the words in the book and stuff. But I do have a selfish question. How did you approach step two when you first came to NA? And what did a power greater than yourself mean to you then? And it has changed, but has it changed since then?
Um, I think it has changed. And in part because when I got clean, there were ideas about this concept of belief in a God or not believing in a God that I hadn't fleshed out yet. And so I'm trying to gather my thoughts here. I think it's in my story where I talk about how I could relate to the first step. So I was just going to focus on that, and I would deal with the second step when that time came. And when that time came, I kind of went on this search, trying to find something that I could present to other people in NA. Like, see, I found my higher power. And I never really found anything that I could present. And so what I th like where I'm at today with it is that I think a power greater than myself is anything that I don't think of it so much as greater than myself. One way I think about it is it's a power outside myself. Like if I need my car to be fixed, the power that can fix that car is a mechanic, right? So that's kind of how I look at it today. Like I need help. And if I can get past my own ego and ask for help, I can get that help. And there's lots of places that I can get that help depending on what it is I need help with. And I think the evolution, I went from looking for a God and trying to figure out what this God thing was, trying to figure it out so it could work for me, to kind of just stuffing the idea for a long time and not really touching it, and avoiding it. And I did that for a long time. And then at some point, I had to dig it up again and start to take a deeper look at it to make progress in my recovery.
I thought it was interesting, like on the step two pieces that you were talking about. It's time, or in the story, it says, I moved on to step two and it was time to move on to the God bridge. And some people are on the bridge forever. There may not be, you may not be able to cross the bridge to God, I know for me, I went on the same type of quest, and I started looking for God in all these different places, like looking for love in all the wrong places, and I could never find it, and it's so, just in my on my bridge is like it's something that I found within, which was the capacity to love, and then the ability to practice spiritual principles allows me to do that. And I don't know if that's finding God or just finding like anonymity, like unconditional love. So, but I think I might still be on the bridge, like I never crossed it.
Come on in, Brady.
I first read this story when I was in treatment and very uncomfortable, not knowing what direction I needed to go in. I've always questioned. I've never been a believer per se. I was raised in a very similar environment. Your story speaks to me and has been much of the foundation of my recovery, and I'm extremely grateful for that. One of the things that really speak to me through your story is the fact that you were able to identify the spiritual principles as maybe not exactly a higher power, but being able to understand that the power grid in yourself for a while was the NA program. And I had a very hard time understanding the whole God concept too. And what this story did was allow me to believe and have faith in a fact that I could find an NA that works for me, find a program that works for me. And, you know, my first higher power was, you know, my cabin mates in treatment, because you can take a twig and break a twig, but if you bundle them all together, you can't break them. So it's something greater than myself. When it comes to following and this act of prayer and action that was brought up, one of my favorite lines in your story is, "I'm an atheist who believes in the power of prayer." And I use that sometimes and make people feel, they're like, "What?" But I see acting through the spiritual principles, using the spiritual principles. Prayer is action. Gratitude is action. And, you know, one of my favorite prayers or quotes that we have in NA is Jimmy Kay's gratitude prayer. My gratitude speaks when I share, when I care, share with others the NA way. And I really try to focus on that. And so one question that I have is, you say in your story that you work now with a bunch of individuals from different backgrounds. And I know that for me, that would take a lot of tolerance and acceptance. But you know, what is your favorite thing about working with not just other atheists like ourselves, but people from all walks of life in the NA program?
Oh, that's a great question. I think, like, my first and immediate thought is the idea of finding common ground. Because I think the thing that really speaks to me is the connection. And connection happens when we find common ground. Like, just because I sit down with somebody who is a believer and we talk about how they recover, and it can be different than the way that I recover, like, it's not entirely different. There are things that are similar there. And it's through those similarities that we find connections. And the differences, I mean, they can serve to erode the connection, or they can serve as a means of curiosity to build more connection. If I get caught up that somebody believes in a God or a particular type of God or whatever, or they believe in things that I don't believe in, if I get caught up in that, in that minutia, the moment I'm caught up in it, we're separated. Like, the connection's gone. And one of the things that I'm most grateful for about NA is the connections that I have with others. And the depth of those connections, and things like somebody else believing in God and me not, doesn't really affect the depth of that connection. Really, that's kind of, it ends up being kind of a surface thing. And if I can get past the surface, then we can have a much deeper connection. So yeah, I think that would be my answer to your question. You had said prior to asking the question that one of the things you were grateful for about the story was that it allowed you to believe that there was a an NA for you. And that's basically the thesis of the story. Like, you can get, if you want to get clean, you can get clean no matter what. That's what the story is about. The whole I don't believe in God and I'm in a fellowship that believes in God kind of thing is just story. I mean, the real piece of that story is that it doesn't matter what you believe or what you don't believe or what you've been through. If you want to get clean, you can find a way to get clean.
I just one more thing I wanted to throw in is, after reading your story and then discovering Living Clean, the journey continues, and that chapter on spirituality and being able to separate this idea of religion and spirituality and learn that, the right to our own spirituality or connection in NA is unconditional. And that alone, and thinking of our basic text when it says our disease is spiritual in nature. And while I had a hard time kind of coming to terms with that through studying our basic text, because it's a book to be studied, not read. I started to be able to make those connections, and then it comes back around to your story. It really did set the basis for where I've gone in my recovery, even though when I didn't necessarily intend it to. So, but I keep coming back around to it, and I share it often.
Well, I mean, I have no, I'll just say real quick, I have no idea where I'm going to end up next. I've never been clean this long before, so.
Right. So I just wanted to jump in for a second, and actually, any one of you that want to jump in and answer this, please do. Just for the people who may be listening, who are brand new, who have the same kind of ideas and thoughts about this higher power. Like, when you get introduced to Narcotics Anonymous and you see these words that may be uncomfortable, God or whatever those words may be, what was some of those initial thoughts when you read the steps? And then, like, how did you ultimately decide to stay? We preach it all the time. This is a spiritual, not religious program. But from an atheist point of view, I would imagine that there's, as you go down through that, there's so many signs of, religion throughout those steps and throughout this walk. So, yeah. So just kind of like your first initial reactions, and how did you ultimately overcome those and end up staying and leading to where you were in the story?
Yeah, so for maybe the first 3 years of my recovery, I felt like an outsider and I felt like I was faking it to make it. I hate that. And I wanted a program that, that could be mine too, and not just like a tweaked out version of it. And it was about 3 years in, and I was at a chili cook-off, and I had it. I had it with the prayer. I had it with people praying for me because I know what that means. And I stood up and I was like, screw this program. You guys all suck. Fuck your God, and super angry and like in tears left. And a member pointed out to me that there was, he asked me if I read the basic text, and my answer was no. And he said, there's a story about it called Atheists Recover Too. Read it, you dummy, And I was like, oh. And I was always afraid to look for evidence of atheism in Narcotics Anonymous because I feared that I might not find anything, like any proof of a valid existence with the way of my non-belief. And there it was in black and white. And then since it was there, I did some further digging. And it turns out since the third edition of the basic text, on the last page, it said, for those of you who don't believe in God. And there's also something else in, I think it's in Works How and Why. I'm sure Francis could correct me. For those of you who don't pray, meditation might be the only, I mean, there's things in there that can definitely make us feel included. I totally forgot what the question was, but it was the story, Atheists Recover Too,
Yeah.
that really opened the door.
Brady?
I was really blown away at the very beginning and very afraid of the word God. And while I'm not afraid of it anymore, I still don't use it very often. I prefer the higher power. And so I was very uncomfortable at the beginning, but I had a lot of wonderful people around me who accepted me for who I was. I had a few share at me occasionally. Oh, you'll figure it out. You'll learn. But it was that acceptance from others that really helped me be more comfortable. And the fact that I clearly define a difference between, sorry, that's my dog, religion and spirituality. And when learning the way that Narcotics Anonymous defines spirituality and practicing the spiritual principles, it made me much more comfortable in understanding that I can find a spiritual path through this program. And, Greg P., who I listen to his old recordings all the time, in one of his talks mentions that he feels like he can reach this feeling of enlightenment through the Narcotics Anonymous program that any religion or philosophy or anything like that can provide. And I believe that. As a person who's never felt like they fit in religion or really had a concept of spirituality to begin with, finding this program really provided an outline for me, a basis in which to learn and grow. I consider myself a student of recovery, a student of Narcotics Anonymous, where it's my goal to work the steps to learn how to live with me and learn the traditions to learn how to live with you. And while doing that, practice spiritual principles taught in our program to the best of my ability. And that's what the program has showed me, and that's how I became comfortable, with the concept of God in our literature. I'm not the kind of person who goes through it now and tries to replace the word God every time with higher power or something else. That's fine because for me, I don't have to believe in a deity or pray to a deity or expect the clouds to open up and something come down or pray to anything when, if I want to feel gratitude, I practice acts of gratitude. If I want to feel love, I practice acts of love. And for me, prayer is action and utilizing the spiritual principles. And so that's how it works for me.
Thank you, Brady. Jeremy, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'll just to answer your question, I think in my story I expressed my initial response, which was to not think this was for me. But the reason I kept coming back or came back is because NA was attractive to me. The way the people interacted with each other, the connections that they had was, I mean, I could see that it was real, and it wasn't like what I had in my life, and I wanted it. And I didn't know if I could get it or not, but I knew I wasn't going to get it if I didn't come back. And so I kind of, like I say in the story, it's like I'll focus on what makes sense to me, which is powerlessness and unmanageability, and I'll deal with the rest of it when it comes. And what I've been able to find is that I can have that connection and do have that connection.
So, like when you first get in, there's this typical thing that people like to make people who don't believe in God feel comfortable with, like they break down the God word, group of drug addicts or anything. Did they do that for you? And what was your initial thoughts of that?
So I got some of that. What I really remember is people coming up to me after meetings and inviting me to their church because their church was different. And I would like their church. That's what I remember. But yeah, I mean, I got the whole you can believe a doorknob as your higher power kind of thing, which never made sense to me. But yeah, I got those kinds of things. And I don't think I was really looking for, oh, I mean, I, for a while I was looking for a way for it to work. But the things that people were telling me weren't landing. It just didn't make sense. It didn't connect. I think the goal that they had in telling me those things wasn't what was happening for me. I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's interesting to hear you guys' perspective because I've took a very, well, I don't know if it's unique, but it's been a weird, to say the least, spiritual journey since I've been here, coming in as somebody who had a religious background to ultimately figuring out that that didn't necessarily work for me, to not really believing in anything. To where I'm at today is I don't fucking know. I just don't know. I know that when I put the program to work, things seem to work out in my favor. But as far as what's up there or if there's anything up, I have no clue. I have no clue. And I find myself feeling uncomfortable when others try to talk about their spiritual path now. And what's funny is that's what I did in the beginning. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's kind of uncomfortable now because I'm in this phase of I don't necessarily believe that way, but I also don't know what I believe, if that makes sense. So this is all very fascinating and great stuff that I'm able to apply to my recovery as well. So thank you all for that. Francis, you got anything, man?
Yeah, I was thinking about that trip to Colorado when we went with Chris and Boyd to that Shelby Museum. And we had that long drive, and Chris forced us into listening to AA history symposium speakers. Like we were on this long drive, he starts playing stuff from his phone, and he's saying, "Well, AA history is NA history." I'm like, ah. So like so down the rabbit hole I go, kind of looking at where AA comes from. And there seems like there's this power struggle. Like NA has like a power struggle between Los Angeles and the literature movement and all that stuff. But this was New York and Akron, right? And then Bill Wilson was trying to really pull away from the Oxford group and away from God, like the whole religious thing, and like rewriting it so it's real easy for everybody. And then Dr. Bob and the Akron group, like they had their heels into the Oxford group, and just being they wanted to call it the James group or the James Club or something from the Book of James. And like now I see us evolving. We're our own program. We're way more inclusive, and our language has changed to a point where like there's room for everybody. And I think that's really neat. So you being a guitar teacher, I'm like, is there an O note? I know there's a G note and a D note, but is there an O note? And I think there might be an O note, which is the open note, right? Like, which is nothing, right? So maybe like you get to have the open note in your G-O-D as a guitar teacher. Like, it's there's nothing there. That's the O note, right?
I mean, an O note, like in guitar. Let's see, I'm going to get all into the guitar stuff.
Well, I don't know anything about it. I was Googling while we were here. I'm like, can you apply G-O-D to guitar playing? And is there an O note? And I'm like, it said open or something.
So yeah, open is when you play a string without fretting it.
Yeah.
And whatever the string is tuned to is what the note is.
Okay.
And I've never thought about guitar in that way.
Maybe we could just not fret about it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
That was beautiful. And right on time.
So kind of moving forward, we've talked about the story, and you got to do the thing with Francis, the Paradise Strong meeting, and kind of talk about your story. And I'm sure you've talked about it on different occasions too, but I'm really interested in kind of the story post writing this story. Like, where what kind of happened afterwards, after this story was came out in the basic text, up to where you're at today?
So there's some juicy stuff there, I think. Yeah, interestingly, I don't talk about my story very often because it, like when I'm sitting in meetings or in, conversation with other addicts, it's not the pertinent topic. So I don't talk about it a lot. And it's something that I wrote in 2005. Like it's not. While the vast majority of that story still applies in my life, I'm not viewing my life through the lens of that story, if that makes sense. But in terms of what happened afterwards, is that story kind of opened a can of worms for me. I had mentioned earlier that I had kind of stuffed like the whole trying to figure out the God thing for a while. And it wasn't that I believed in that I just didn't know what it was I believed. What I was stuffing was this feeling of not belonging because I didn't believe in a God, and I was in a fellowship that seemed to advocate the belief in a God as the solution to the problem of addiction. And I stuffed that for years, and my sponsor, this was like 2015. He caught it. We were doing some step work together, and he had asked me what he'd asked me to do this like a summary of the first three steps. And going over that summary, he asked me like, why are you translating God out of the steps here? Didn't you do that the first time you went through the steps? And I, my answer was, of course I did, but every time I do the steps, I approach it from this new place. And so I got to go through the process all over again. And he's like, so what you're telling me is that you have to do more work to get the same results as everybody else. And if that's what you have to do, then that's grounds for a resentment. And so my fourth step after that was to write about my resentments at Narcotics Anonymous, which I was apparently in denial about because I didn't realize that I was resentful at Narcotics Anonymous, but it had certainly affected my life. I had backed off on my meeting attendance, and I wasn't much of a participant. I mean, obviously, I was still working the steps with my sponsor, and I'd show up to my home group on occasion. But when I started to do that fourth step, like just it all came to the surface. And there was a period there where I didn't know if I was going to stay in Narcotics Anonymous, because I didn't know if I belonged here. And that was like the ultimate question in that step, was to figure out, is this the place for me? And luckily I didn't just look at my resentments at Narcotics Anonymous. I wanted kind of this whole world view about my participation. So I looked at my resentments, but I also looked at the things that I had gotten from Narcotics Anonymous. I looked at the things I had contributed. I looked at my relationships. Like, I did a bunch of writing. It was probably the most impactful fourth step I've done. And coming out of it, I realized that there were things in Narcotics Anonymous that I valued and that I wasn't willing to give them up just because I didn't believe in God. And just because I wasn't sure that I totally belonged here. Like, that's something that I was going to have to figure out. And I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm still not completely sure about that. But the things that I've gained by being here are so important to me that I am sticking around for them. So yeah, the just to I got it here, which is funny. The my first sentence of that fourth step kind of tells it. I have to like find it though. I might just I could probably quote it from memory. It's I'm a member of a fellowship that at that oh no, I can't remember it off the top of my head. I'm a member of an organization that advocates a solution I don't believe in for a problem I think they mischaracterize. That was the first line of my fourth step. I'm grateful to my sponsor at the time because he could put it in terms that were simple enough for me to see and to move forward and when I couldn't see it. So, and that's part of why I think the community is so important because I can't do it alone, right? I need the help of others. And in that case, like my life is completely different today because of that work that I did.
Wow. That is so fascinating 'cause I think about all the people that I have seen walk away from the program who, if you were to ask them, wholeheartedly would tell you, I know this program works. I believe it in my core that it works. But they choose to leave anyway. And here you are writing about it in your fourth step where you have these overwhelming doubts about this program working for you and your place in it, yet here we are all this time later. And you're still
Yeah.
here. It's fascinating.
How does what about sponsorship? Does being an atheist affect your ability to work with other people that do have a belief in something like a religion or different beliefs? How is that working?
It hasn't really. Well, it puts me in a place where I practice open-mindedness for sure. But the other thing is I feel like I've reached a place where like ultimately I don't know, right? I don't have evidence for a God. I don't believe in a God. But somebody else does, and if that's their belief, that's their choice, and it's not for me to take away from them. I don't approach it that way. I'm not at odds with other people or their belief. So at that point, I feel like as a sponsor, part of what I do is I help them to deepen that relationship if that's the relationship they want to have. And I don't necessarily have a like I can't necessarily relate to that relationship. But I can relate to wanting connection in my life. So if I can apply that terminology to help them deepen their connection with their higher power, and it helps them to stay clean and have a better life, then I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing as a sponsor.
Yeah.
And it gives them an understanding of the steps and, everything else. But
Yeah.
yeah, I've had it's interesting because over the years I've had people approach me, and whenever somebody asks me to sponsor them, the first thing I do is we have a sit down, and I'm like, I don't know what your expectations are. maybe we should air those out. And part of what I do in that process is I tell people that I don't believe in a God. And if that's a problem for you, I understand. I don't have a problem with that. But you need to know that. And over the years, I've had people tell me that they believe in a God and it's not an issue that I don't. I've had people tell me that they believe in a God and the reason they sought me out to be their sponsor is because I don't believe in a God and they want a perspective different than theirs. I have had people say this isn't going to work for me if you don't believe in a God. And we still have a connection and a relationship. I don't sponsor them. So it's I've seen lots of different iterations of that. So
Looking at the fellowship as it is today, do you see a place in the future where we could do better as a fellowship to make atheists feel more welcome? Or is that something that's very personal? Like, is it up to the individual to feel more welcome? Or is there something the fellowship could do, whether it be, maybe an IP on it or something more detailed or something that we could add? Is there something that we could do better as a fellowship, or is this something that you've just had to personally kind of find your way in?
I don't know if I have a clear answer to that question because it's kind of a tough question. Because I mean, for me, I had to find my own way, and I think that's true for everybody in NA. In some way, they have to find their own way in here, whether they believe or not. On the other hand, I feel like Narcotics Anonymous could do as a fellowship could do. Better to reach out to people that aren't the majority, so to speak. And I've seen strides in that. But I also don't know if it's Narcotics Anonymous's responsibility to reach out to a subset of addicts as small as atheists are, which is challenging, because I want them to. Certainly in the meetings I go to, oftentimes I'm not just the minority, I'm the only one there that's an atheist. And
It's like
that's
the
considered.
history nerd subset.
What's that?
It's like the history nerd subset. It's very small.
And throughout most of my recovery, I was often the only person in a meeting that I knew of, because not everybody speaks up about not believing. Which I found out after my story came out. But oftentimes I thought I was the only one in a meeting that was an atheist. And how much of our resources do we want to take out to such a small subset of people? And my struggle is part of the resentments that came up for me in that fourth step was that our literature, like in The Journey Continues, speaks about non-believers and then talks about the benefits of belief. So I like that kind of stuff would get under my skin, but they're trying. So I can't fault NA for that. So I don't know if there's a good answer in terms of what NA can do. I know for me that a lot of what I had to do, I kind of had to figure out on my own. There was another member I was out to dinner with, this is years ago, when I was struggling in the midst of that fourth step. And I just couldn't find people that had similar experience to me. And he's like, Jeremy, sometimes there isn't somebody else that's gone through what you've gone through. Sometimes somebody has to be a pioneer, and maybe you're just one of those people. Maybe you're an NA pioneer in this regard. And I don't know if that's true or not, but it gave me some hope and some solace in the moment, because at that time I couldn't find somebody else with a similar experience.
You definitely have played a significant role as far as being a pioneer. I'm not saying you're the only one, but this story has been what you've been looking for others. And I'm sure you know that and have had others tell you that, but yeah, you have definitely blazed a trail for, and that's why Brady's on here, that's why Wade's on here, to kind of show some appreciation of that, because I know those feelings, not to speak for them, but I know they've had the same feelings that you just talked about. So this story is that hope shot, and so I guess that's where the question kind of came from. I feel like regardless of how small the group is, we should always strive to be more inclusive. Like we have made huge strides in other areas where they're still very much the minority. It may be a larger group, but still very much the minority as far as the whole fellowship. So that's where the question kind of stemmed from. And I've seen Wade had his hand up. Did you have something you wanted to add, Wade?
Yeah, the question of, if we can do anything better. I mean, yeah, so of course we can. But when I came to NA, I was looking for any reason to feel other, and that was me looking for reasons. And being an atheist was just one of the many convenient things that made me different from everyone. And, that so, and I'm grateful that that was the biggest one, because there's evidence of it not being true, me not belonging because of my non-belief. It was like, oh shit, it's in the book. Dang it. I mean, there's a million other things I could have latched onto: being gay, being Asian, being this, being that, but that's the one I held on to, and it was like super disproven. And I'm really hopeful, because I in the upcoming interim WSC, they're talking about, changing some of the language to make it more inclusive, not just for atheists, but, all of us. And just the fact that it's being talked about is wonderful, I feel. My biggest fear, can I just say this real quick before we end? You know how you shouldn't meet your heroes? So when the opportunity came and Francis was like, hey, the author of Atheist Recovered Too, I was like, oh no. Because I thought, maybe we'd do the thing we did for the speaker jam and everything, and we'd read his story, and he would say something like, and now I'm a practicing Lutheran, or something like that. Like that changed too. But yeah, I'm relieved we're here. Anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
So when I was answering your question, one of the things that I was thinking about, or that I was kind of envisioning in my mind, was actually sitting in a meeting and considering all the people in the meeting. I think World Service and our service structure and the people involved are making strides to be more inclusive. At least that's the way I see it from here. So I think there that is happening. But when I sit in a meeting, oftentimes here in the Deep South, people are sharing from where they're at, and like I think everybody has a seat in Narcotics Anonymous. And the thing that initially attracted me here before I decided to join as a member of the fellowship, in my very first meeting, I remember very clearly that somebody, this woman, expressed it was like her first or second meeting, and she was in treatment and she was really angry, and she just went off on everybody in the room during her share. And then in response to her, everybody just held space. Like they allowed her to be where she was, to express what she needed to express. And they didn't tell her to do anything different or that she was wrong. They just held space for her. And it was very moving for me to see that. And I think if we can do more of that as individuals in meetings and as a fellowship as a whole, then we're going to be that much more attractive to those who are looking for the differences. Because that's the thing that caught me.
Brady.
Yeah. Coming into NA, this was the only story I had that was able to provide me the direction I felt I needed. And when I think about what the fellowship as a whole could do, I immediately think about the other fellowship for a second, and they have a book called Under One Big Tent. And it's nothing but a set of stories from people who are non-believers. Now, it comes from multiple different perspectives, but it's something that, even though it has to do with the other fellowship, it helped me even further. And I didn't discover it until well after I had this story. But that is something else that had helped me. So, while maybe not changing a bunch of terminology in our literature or creating a bunch of different things for people, but one thing I've always thought it would be neat is if we had more collections of stories and people's experiences, because I'm an anthropologist, so I love history, I love culture, I love learning from other individuals who are different than me or who also are the same, have similarities to me as well. So that's something that I strongly relate to, is other people's personal stories. So I think that would be something neat.
I think that's fascinating. Have we ever taken anything from AA before? Can we do that?
I was thinking about the ninth concept, and like in relationship to that being the lone voice being one of the most important voices to listen to, and like in establishing a consciousness about our fellowship, and maybe your story is the lone voice of the stories, like about the atheists, but it's a very important voice, like in the consciousness of our fellowship.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's all good stuff. And Brady, you've got I mean, the wheels are spinning up here, like after you brought up the under one tent,
Let's do
like
it.
yeah, let's do it. Yeah. I'm with you. When I get lower down in the service structure, I'll be an advocate for that. Just remind me. Yeah, no, I think that's great.
Well, it's funny, when I first got clean, I remember being at like my first convention and thinking about the main speakers as these like huge people, right? Because they're in front of this huge crowd, and like what would it be like one day to be one of them, or what would it be like one day to have your story in the basic text kind of thing. Like I remember having those thoughts early on in recovery, and I never knew that it would be possible to have my story in the basic text. I didn't know that we were ever going to revise the basic text again, because I got clean right after the fifth edition came out, and then there was a moratorium. There was no new editions coming out for whatever it was, 10 years. And
20.
oh, 20, it was 20. So yeah, so it didn't change for a long time. And so yeah, the idea of more stories, I think is a fascinating idea. I do know that I think we have another book that I haven't read that that does have more stories, but I think offering that to people who haven't had the opportunity is great every once in a while. So.
Yeah, and you could feature because there are a bunch of unique different paths to recovery from things outside of just atheism too. I mean, you could really do a lot with a book that kind of had a story for everyone, not just this select group, but all groups could be represented. I think that would be great. Yeah. We all got something to do at our home groups now. There we go. As we quickly approach the hour, what I would like to do, I think another question that I would like to ask is, just for the individual that may be listening, and this may be their first experience with somebody that they could relate to. We've kind of touched on some of the things that you've had to overcome to stay, but what is your message to that person, that's struggling to find identity because of their lack of belief? Yeah, what would that message to that person be?
Well, I mean that if you Like I said before, if you want to stay clean, you can stay clean. I don't think that Narcotics Anonymous is the only way to stay clean, but it's the way that has worked for me. And if this is where somebody's seeking recovery, they can find it here, whether they believe in God or not, regardless of the background they have, regardless of where they come from, sexual identity, religion, lack of religion, all that like we say in our literature. And the thing that I think has been really helpful for me through all my struggles is, and I'm sure everybody has heard this, is as I look for the similarities and not the differences. I can find the differences. I'm really good at finding the differences. It was important for my survival at one point. But today it doesn't really help me to survive. It's the similarities that help me to survive. So, if I can find the similarities, I can find connection, I can plug in, and it's through that that I find people that I can relate to and where I can find a sense of connection and home.
That's beautiful. Just the message that you shared just goes to show how universal the program is, because what you shared applies to all of us. You know, we can all find the differences. You know, we can all find, you know, spend a majority of our time finding reasons why we shouldn't be here. You know, finding the reason why we should stay is what saves our ass. This has been so cool. I can't thank you all enough for coming on and sharing your experience. Brady and Wade, I thought it was pretty cool that you got to be involved too. Thank you for you guys showing up. Francis, you knocked it out of the park again, man. Way to go.
Yay, thanks, Jeremy. You are the book.
I love it. So that's all we got, folks. We'll see you again next week with another episode. See you then.
Thank you for joining us on our Living Clean podcast. This is another platform that we can share our message of recovery, which is an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Join that no matter what club. You can contact us through text. The number is 931-306-9364.